Good morning, everyone. Thanks for coming along. Good to see quite a few people interested in test-driven C++, especially with STL giving another talk in another room. So thanks for coming. So just a quick show of hands before we get started. Who's done some form of TDD before in any language, not just C++? So a fair few, but quite a few haven't. Who's sort of reasonably familiar with what TDD is, at least? So quite a few people fairly new to TDD. So it's not going to be a deep dive on TDD. I will explain a bit about it, sort of recap what it means, and we'll sort of bear some of that out in the demos. So hopefully you'll still get plenty out of that. But also the other part of this is it's with Catch. So Catch is a test framework originally written by me, many contributions now over the years from others, so it's more of a community thing. And I'm going to look at some of the ways that Catch, I feel at least, is particularly good for doing TDD. But before we get on to that, I want to concentrate more on that first part, the test-driven C++. So, I did have my clicker and somehow I managed to leave it at home. I completely failed to connect my Apple Watch to use it as a remote, so I'll have to do it from here. So test-driven C++, obviously talking about TDD, which you usually expand to test-driven development, but some people like to expand it to test-driven design. And that's quite nice, because it puts the emphasis on that word design. And I think that's really the sort of one of the most valuable parts that comes out of TDD. Unfortunately, that's not the word that most people focus on. Most people just seem to get stuck on that first word, test. And that's a bit unfortunate because it has a lot of connotations, a lot of baggage that comes along with that word. And people just get a reaction when they talk about tests. That's not really what TDD is all about. Some people say that the tests are not even the most important part of TDD. You may argue with them. But I think the most important word here is actually the middle one, driven. Test-driven development or test-driven design. What does it actually mean to drive your design from tests? To answer that question, I think we also need to look at what we actually mean by test. I say a lot of people have a reaction when they hear that word. I think it's worth clarifying that. And to answer that, we need to ask another question. Very broad question. Why do we actually write code in the first place? Why do we do it? There's always a reason. Here's a few possibilities. Maybe we want to deliver stakeholder value, because that gets us out of bed in the morning. Perhaps it's to meet a business need. Yeah, sounds important. Maybe because we were just told to do it. It's our job. We write code. Someone told us to write this code. We write it. We don't really care why. All of these things may be true. But as I said, they're not particularly motivating. It's not really what we connect to as programmers. So how about this one? We write code to solve a particular problem. Now that's something we can connect to. We're problem solvers. That's what we do. We solve problems. Now that problem may deliver stakeholder value. It may meet a business need. It may be what we're asked to do, but we can connect to the problem solving part. So we're getting somewhere. A couple more questions we need to ask though. To solve a particular problem, we need to ask what the problem is that we're trying to solve. Another question is, how do we know when we've solved it? Seem like simple, fundamental questions, so trivial we'll miss them. We won't ask the questions. And that's a shame because we end up not actually answering them either. We end up solving the wrong problem. And that's an incredible waste. Or maybe we start off on the right problem, but we don't actually solve it. We think we have, but how do we know? That's the question. So how do we know when we solve the problem? Well, let's look at a really simple requirement. So we'll add two numbers together. This is very vague, let's run with it. We might jump straight into some code. I'm not doing TDD here. Let's write this code. Now we'll set aside for the moment other questions we can ask. You know, did we mean integers? There's all sorts of other questions we can ask about the requirements, but set that aside. Integers are fine here. We'll write some code like this. And now we need to know, does this actually address the requirement that we were trying to solve, the problem we were trying to solve? How can we verify that? We might say, in a case like this, it's so simple, we can just look at the code. We can see it's going to do it. And that may be true. We might be able to simplify our code to the point that we can verify it just by inspection. And there are whole disciplines that have been built up around code inspection, and they're quite successful, as it happens. But generally, we want to actually run some code through this and see what the output is, just to make sure this does actually do what we want. And of course, in more complex cases, all the more so. So we want to make a call to our add function, give it some sample values. We might do a few of these, but let's go with 1 and 2 at the moment. And that will exercise the code, but still we don't know that it's returned the right value. We need some means to verify it. It's the simplest way that we can verify that that returned the value we expected. How about just a simple C assert? So we've got our expression, add 1 and 2. We're saying that's equal to 3. That's going to evaluate to Boolean, true or false. And if it's false, assert will terminate, at least in a debug build. So simple, straightforward. What happens when that does fail? Oh, before I go on, there's a bit more to it, actually. We do need to include the header for assert, and we need to put it in some sort of function. It could be main. But still, that's just C++ for you. So if we introduce a deliberate error into this, let's say we multiply instead of add, what are we going to get out of this? Something like this. So I captured this on my Mac, running Xcode with Clang. The output I got told me what the expression was that I wrote, told me the function that it was in when it failed, main in this case. And that's nice. You write a number of different test functions, you want to capture that name. And of course, it tells you the file and line number that the assertion failed on. So you can go straight to the cause of the problem. That's actually really nice. I haven't really invested in anything else other than just the standard library here. And yet I'm getting some quite good feedback for a very simple test. But there are some shortcomings. One is that this output is implementation dependent. So I ran this on Visual Studio in Windows, and I got quite similar output. Didn't give me the function name, which is a shame. Gave me most of the rest, but none of that's actually guaranteed. All that's guaranteed is that it might actually terminate. So that's not so good. Doesn't scale too well either. If you've got hundreds or thousands of these asserts, you probably want to group them, you put them in functions. Then you want to have something that controls which ones get called, and you get more and more of these requirements, and you end up building your own test framework. So that's when we turn to test frameworks, and we can see that we might need some extra dependency. So this talks about catch, which is a test framework. What does this look like? We write it in catch. Very similar, actually. We still include a header file. This time it's catch.hpp. We still have to have some sort of function to put it in. In this case, that's provided by this test case macro. You notice we haven't given it a test name. We don't have to, we usually would. Can be useful for demos and for exploration. Just did not have to worry about that yet. So we'll name things later. And instead of assert, we've said require. But the basic flow is still there. So we haven't lost too much other than taking on that additional dependency. So that's quite nice. There is one other thing we have to do though. Because catch will write its own version of main for us, if we ask it to, just in exactly one source file, we need to put this hash define before we include catch, catch config main. There's another one if we want to provide our own main. But apart from that, that's the only additional thing over the over the assert example. So what sort of feedback does this give us now? Well, to see that, I think we should do a quick demo. So I'm going to come out here, start Xcode. So I'm running on my Mac, so I'm using Xcode. There's nothing particularly Xcode specific about any of this, so other than just setting up a project. Don't know if I've got enough screen space to do this, actually. See if I can get rid of that dock. Okay, we got there in the end. Sorry about that. Everyone read that okay? Okay. So, like any good IDE, Xcode has written a load of code that we don't actually need. So what we want to do is include catch. Now this is the spirit of TDD. We're actually including a file we don't have yet. Seeing that fail, so now we need to get catch. So I have to go to my previous version of this talk. So I've got that file there. I would normally download it at the same time, but already having too many problems here. And then we'll go back to our project. So I'm just going to drop the single header file into that folder. So hopefully I haven't interrupted the flow of this too much. But so normally I would get that file from GitHub, download it straight there, and we're done. Now to go back to Xcode. That will now compile, but doesn't link. The reason it doesn't link is because we don't have main. So we need to put that hash define in that I mentioned. Catch config main. That now compiles and links, and we have a complete working application. What's going on there? Okay. I'm going to abandon this session for now. We're going to come back in a moment to do another demo anyway. But first, let's go back to the slides. So I wanted to talk a little bit. Oh, no. There we go. Okay. Something's working. I want to talk a little bit about why I wrote catch in the first place. So let's go back to dealing with the technical issues in a moment. Because after all, there are one or two other test frameworks for C++ already out there. This is a page on Wikipedia dedicated to just listing all of the test frameworks for C++. If you're taking notes, you might want to write quickly. There's 56 of them there. At least there was when I captured that list about a year or so ago. And of course, that's not exhaustive. So why do they need to write another one? It's a good question. So I obviously didn't try every single one of those. I tried all the popular ones. And there always seem to be sort of one or two things missing. Probably the main one is just simplicity. We saw right at the start that you can actually get quite far just with an assert statement. And we don't really want to give up that simplicity in terms of how you write the tests, that directness using natural expressions and so on. There seemed to be a lot of boilerplate and ceremony involved in so many of these test frameworks. I just didn't like getting involved in that. Another one is expressiveness. So just with a small amount of code, being able to get rich feedback. We did quite well with assert. If I got through my last demo, you'd have seen that catch gives you a little bit more. And low overhead. So you did see it's just a single header file you can grab from GitHub, you include that, and you get started. No messing with static libraries and getting other things up and running, worrying about the different build settings. You just include and go, and you're done. So they're the values that I was looking for, and I didn't really find elsewhere, at least at the time. And I've tried to build these things into catch. So hopefully you'll agree if you try it out. So going back to that example we looked at earlier with the add function, we saw how that works in catch. Now we can add a name in. Now, this might be surprising if you've used other test frameworks. Most test frameworks will force you to write your test names as function names, usually. You have to find out a way to couch these names. And you want to try and be descriptive, because that's what we're told. Try and couch them in legal C++ identifiers. Well, in catch, you can just use a freeform string. Spaces, punctuation, whatever you like. Be as descriptive as you like. And more than that, there's an optional extra argument where you can put, in square brackets, tags, or as many of these as you like. And these let you run groups of tests or exclude groups of tests, and you can actually build up some fairly complex expressions to be able to sort of cut across your test suite. And we'll see that a little bit more in action later. So that's quite useful. So this is the point where I wanted to come to my second demo. So what I'm going to do is I've tried to keep a locked down user for my presentation, but it doesn't seem to be working out. So I'm going to log in as me, which hopefully will give us less problems. Done that. Okay. So starting Xcode again. That resolution is maybe a bit too high now. Let's see how it goes when we start Xcode. I'm gonna create a new project. So for this demo, I wanted to pick an example I could sort of work through and show you a fair bit of catch, but also demonstrate TDD. So a bit of a meatier demo. So I'm gonna do a ring buffer. Now, how are those fonts looking? Is that readable for the back? Okay. So again, we'll get rid of that. Let's try including catch again. We know we want to do catch config main. We know we're going to need that header file. Get it from somewhere different this time. Where did we create that? Okay. So we're going to drop that in there. That should now compile and build. This is where we got to earlier. And we couldn't run it. Okay, that's a bit weird. I need to do that. Well, that's never not worked before. It's definitely bad demo day today. Let's try and run it from the terminal. Okay, that's better. Let's try and bring the fonts up a bit on there. I prefer running this from the terminal anyway, so it's no big loss. Okay, that terminal readable. So, no test run, it's what we expect, so that's fine. So, let's start our demo. So we said we're gonna do a ring buffer. We'll call it that for now. Now, we're gonna want some sort of ring buffer class. So let's declare an instance of that. So this is the start of the TDD. We haven't created a ring buffer class yet, but in our test, we're asking for one. This is the way TDD works. We write the test code first, and then even when that doesn't compile, that's telling us something. It's telling us we need to create a class called ring buffer. So let's do that. Don't have to implement it. What we're doing is the minimum that we need to get this test to pass. And even though there's no assertions yet, just compiling is the first stage. I can't run it there. As we can see, that still runs. But it's not particularly interesting. So let's start adding some requirements. What can we say about
an empty ring buffer?
Well, we can say that its size is 0. We haven't written a size method yet, so let's do that. Give it a size t. And what are we going to return? Well, now we just want to make the test pass. So we're going to hard code a 0 in there.
If you've not done TDD before, this might seem a bit stupid. You know, we know that's not general enough, but this is the point. We're not going to write the general purpose code until we have tests that cover it. So we only ever write what we need to make the test pass, and then we think about what tests we need to write to make that fail.
So for now, that should make the test pass and everything is green. So that's good. Now,
a little aside, you may have noticed that
the compilation is getting a bit slow here. We haven't written much code, so what's going on? The reason is this
catch config main. So I said that causes catch to generate a version of main for us, and it does. There's a little bit more to it than that, though. We package catch as a single header file, but it has a whole framework in there. And normally you would write separate header files and implementation files. And in catch, both of those are present. It's compiling the whole thing every time.
We don't want to pay the cost of that. So what we'll do, we'll add another test file. Let's call it test.cpp for now. We'll forget to get rid of the header. We'll copy everything from our main file into there, except we'll remove that hash define. We only need it in one file. And in our main file, that's all we're going to do.
So this is something I get asked quite a lot, you know, why does catch compile so slowly? That's usually the reason.
You're putting all your tests in the same file as the catch config main. It's great for demos and to get started. But once you're actually building up a test suite, it's best to keep this off in its own file. That's now only going to have that long compile once. Get that out of the way. And now, if I introduce a deliberate mistake there,
File again, you can see it's pretty much instant. That's what we would expect. We can run that, we can see the test fail. So we didn't see the test fail before because I didn't do my previous demo. Now you can see what the output looks like. We've got plenty of red there to show us that everything has gone wrong. See that the test has failed. You can see, well, we've got the test name up here, the file and I number of the test case, file and I number of the failing assertion, the assertion as we wrote it. So far we're sort of on par with the assert statement, but now we've also got the expansion of the expression, the left-hand side and right-hand side separated out. And that's interesting, because in most test frameworks, to get that, you need to rewrite your expression using a macro like assert equals, in this case. It's quite common. It might seem like a minor thing, but it's these little speed bumps that sort of, you have to have a slightly different mindset in the way you write your test code. It's just slightly less natural than the code you would have written otherwise. It adds up. So here we're just using a natural expression and it's broken it down for us. Now if we get time, so wasted a bit of time on the technical issues, we will go into how I do that a bit later. Let's go back to our ring buffer. Sorry, let me come down because my ear's a bit blocked. So I still didn't quite catch that. Sorry about this.
You define the test case in your other source file, so I haven't made that.
In the other source file? You mean when I split from main and test.cpp? So I think the question was, I moved the test into another source file, so how did catch pick them up? So the test case macro, this one here, defines a function behind the scenes, but it also defines a little class that has a constructor that just registers the test case. And then there's a global instance of that. It's a fairly common technique for self-registering test cases. Because we have included catch here, we just didn't use the define to instantiate a main. So it's got all of the catch machinery, so it works exactly the same way there as it would have done in the main test file. Does that answer your question? Great. Okay. So we said that the size is zero. We've hard coded that. Let's fix that again now. And now we can see the test passes again. Great. So what else can we do with a ring buffer? We probably want to be able to add elements. So let's use pushback. I'm going to use pushback and pop front because we're going to have the front of the buffer and the back of the buffer, which move independently. Now, what are we going to put in it? We haven't said what types the ring buffer can hold. So let's go back and make that a template. It's probably what we want. And we'll instantiate this for ints for now. We put a 1 in there. And now we need to write pushback because it's asking us to. And we don't have to implement it because we're not testing anything, any consequences of that just yet. We just need that to be able to compile. Okay, what can we now say about the ring buffer? Well, we've got our size method. We would expect that to now return 1. What's that expect? We would expect this test to fail because we haven't written any code to cope with it yet. And of course it does. Size is still 0. Now's the time we can go back and make the size method more general. So we're going to want something to keep a track of the size. So let's just introduce a member variable, size. Going to want to initialize that in our constructor. Now we can return it here. and we can increment it here. See if that works. And it does.
So this, again, this might seem a bit of an odd way to build our ring buffer. We sort of probably have an idea in our head how we wanted to implement it, but the tests are leading us in a slightly different direction.
But we will get there. Let's carry on with this. Now we've got an item on the ring buffer, or at least we seem to have pushed one. Well, we want to be able to get a value back. Of course, we haven't written pop front yet, so let's do that now. And the minimum we can do to make this pass is just to return the default for t. That compiles. So now what can we say about the ring buffer? Again, we can look at the size. That should now have gone down because we've removed an item. And do we expect that to pass or fail? Hopefully fail, see? And it does.
And again, this is seems like a stupid step. You know, we know that's going to fail. Why do we run it? Well, sometimes it doesn't. And then that tells you something. You've missed something. You should always know exactly what your code is doing.
So we're challenging our assumptions all the time, even the simplest cases. So now we can decrement the size here when we pop back. Notice we haven't got any storage yet. We're not actually storing any of these values. That now passes. Okay, but now we're going to want to test the value. And we want to expect that to be the value that we pushed in, which was a 1. And we would hope that's going to fail. It does. So now this is a point where we're going to want to do some real work. We want to actually hold on to the values we put on. And that
forces us to take on another question, is how big is our ring buffer going to be? We haven't said that anywhere.
So first of all, we want the constructor to take a capacity. There's a few ways we could do this. We might want to make it fixed size at compile time, template argument. We're going to do it like this for now. And we want some underlying storage. I'm going to use a standard vector. Again, there's lots of choices we could do here. This keeps it simple. So how are we going to relate the capacity and the vector? Well, vector has a capacity. That's not quite what we want here. We actually want the buffer to be a fixed size and just have pointers into it. So we're actually going to create a vector already sized to capacity, initialize it to zeros. It gives us somewhere to put our values now. So we could push back, but that would push after our buffer, which is not what we want. We want to actually set into, could do size, if we move that back there.
Not going to be that helpful. Let's
go with this and see what happens. To retrieve the item off, well, we need to get that from the front. We don't have anything that's telling us what the front of the buffer is. So, actually, we're going to need some more indices. We have front and back. Initialize those to zeros. Now we can say push back goes to the back index, which we then want to increment. Obviously there's something else we need to do there, but we're not getting to that just yet. And now pop front, similarly. Take it from the front index. And now the front's going to move on because there's a ring buffer. So we'll increment that as well.
That should be enough if I've not missed anything, which I have, of course, the capacity here. Let's make it 4. That should be enough to pass our tests. And it does. It's definitely not finished, but it passes our test so far. So I chose a buffer size of 4 here just to keep it maintainable for our tests. Another thing to notice here is we've got the code under test and the test in the same file. Don't have to do that, of course. I usually prefer to do it that way when I'm just writing some new class or structure or function. This in isolation helps me to keep it in isolation and not worry about the rest of the system. You can do it in place in the target source file if you want. I'd sort of move it there when it's ready, make sure all the tests still pass. Matter of choice. But something else we're doing wrong here. If you've done any unit testing before, you've probably heard of this guideline that you should only have one assertion per test. That actually means one logical assertion. So down here at the bottom where we're testing the size and the value we got back, that's two aspects of testing the result of PopFront. So that's one logical assert, that's fine. Problem is we have these ones here as well. We're testing some state, mutating the state, testing again, mutating, testing again. And that's considered bad form in unit testing because you can't isolate those different parts. Usually we would have to now separate this out into separate test cases with a lot of duplication, some of which we could factor out into a setup method. But Catch has a different way. We can now create different sections that will be executed separately. So here we're going to add a value. Adding a value increases the size. Give it nice descriptive names again. And that's that part there. This is going to continue on, so we want that in here as well. So that's our second logical assert, off in a section. And then the next section starts here. Popping a value decreases the size and returns the first value. And these names aren't brilliant. We'll come back to that in a little while. But now we've got each logical assert in its own section. But notice we've been able to nest sections here and here, because this section is still dependent on the first section. Our first logical test is the setup for the next logical test. So we've captured that. In other cases, we can include additional sections here, which we will do in a moment, that are not dependent. We'll see how that works. Let's just make sure that still runs. It does. Now, we're not seeing the output here because we haven't seen any failures for a while. We can see the output, even if it succeeds, with dash S. And now we can see, as well as all our results, up here, we've got our test case name and the names of all the sections that have been executed up to that point, like a stack. In fact, it is a stack. This is all stack-based, so it's a really natural fit for C++. And if we scroll back a bit, we can see it's also executed just the first section in isolation. Now that was really the first logical section. So we've got quite a lot of bang for the buck there. And having done that, we can carry on. So we've added one value to our buffer and popped it back again. But it's going to get more interesting if we add more values than there should be room for. So let's start a new section for that. Not there. So adding more values than capacity wraps the buffer. We can get a better name for that in a while. So we're going to want to add at least 5 values now. We can do 5
pushbacks in a row, but that's going to get a bit tedious if we have to do that a lot. So having to write this test, it's putting us in the driving seat, where this is part of the driving part of test-driven development. We're seeing what it's like as a client of our code, rather than just the implementer. And it can often change the way that we want to express our API. It's quite convenient to be able to push many items at once. And with C++ 11, we have a nice way to do that with an initializer list. So I'm going to do an overload of pushback that takes an initializer list and we can quickly loop through there and forward the values onto our single value overload. There's a few ways we could do that. We could use an algorithm. Notice also that that method is implemented entirely in terms of the public interface of our ring buffer. We could choose to move that out as a non-member, non-friend, and there's certain advantages to that. That's a design choice which we had to make separately. If you feel that this is generally useful, it might be clearer to leave it there. If you thought it was just for your tests to start with, maybe better to leave it as a non-member, non-friend. Okay, so now we've got that, we can have a bit more fun and add multiple values. So that should now overflow our buffer and wrap around. Of course, we know it doesn't yet. But what can we say about that now? Again, we can look at the size. That should now be stuck at 4, even though we added 5 items, because that's the point of a ring buffer. So we expect that to fail. And it does. That looks a bit suspicious, though. Okay, I might have to look at that. We'll move on for now. Point is, it did fail. Oh, that's because that's the wrong... That was the failing one. Good. That's a relief. It's one less bug report today. So we expected the 5 because we're not wrapping around. So coming up here, we can see we're unconditionally incrementing size. What we want to do is say if size is less than the capacity. What's the capacity? It's the size of the vector. So that's going to stop at 4 now, which means our test should pass. And it does. We're far from done. Now let's pop front again, see what value we get back. So we know we should be expecting, because we've only got 4 items, we should be expecting a 2. What do we get? Get a 1. So again, that's because here we're unconditionally incrementing our back index. So that's overflowing off the end. I've been told that running a bit short of time, so I'm not going to finish this demo as it is. Most of it's carrying on much the same. I wanted to just pivot into different aspects of Catch. So we've used these test cases and sections here. You can see how that's allowing us to group related parts of the test together to keep single logical assertions and nicely describe the flow through. But if you've done any BDD, behavior-driven development. You might be familiar with another way of talking about these tests, with the given when then approach. And catch supports this as well, with just a set of alternate macros, starting with scenario. So it corresponds to the test case. And then we can say, given an empty ring buffer, does involve a bit more nesting, so the cost you pay. So given an empty ring buffer, sorry, that should have included that. In this case, there's no when. We can say then size will be zero. And then we can say, well, given an empty ring buffer, when a value is pushed, then size becomes one. Now we get the nesting and when a value is popped, then size decreases, the value is returned. I'll just do this one as well. So going back to given an empty ring buffer, when more values than the capacity are added, then buffer wraps around and size stays at capacity. Okay, so let's look at what we've done here. It's the same test, but we've changed the naming a bit. Sorry, I had a question. I have to come over. So I still don't catch all of that. So they're following on. So you're saying that we could put the and when directly under the when? Yes, you could. In fact, I probably should have done that. Rushing a little bit too much. You're quite right. It will work either way, but yes, you've got sort of an additional logical assert in that chain that you probably don't need. So you're quite right. So yeah, the point was here, this part is not really dependent on that then. We can move it out. So okay, so we've introduced this structure and quite a nice property of the naming has emerged as a result of this. I think it's much clearer than what we had a moment ago. And we haven't really had to think too much about it, which has been guided by the given when then structure. So best demonstrated if we actually run that. I run it with dash s, and we've still got that failing test. But if you look now at the test name, we've got a whole scenario description. Scenario ring buffer. Given an empty ring buffer, when more values than the capacity are added, then the buffer wraps around and the size stays at capacity. And we have a few of these. They're all here, all of these routes through that scenario
are covered. And this is human readable. We can talk to someone, maybe not technical, maybe they'd have to be in this case, but maybe they don't know C++. They don't have to look at the code to see the flow. So I think that's a really nice property of this. But we're going to have to get back to the slides to try and wrap up. Back in a different username now. Okay. Skip over some things. Let's go through this part fairly quickly. When a test fails, catch will try and convert all the types involved into strings. And a bit that I just skipped over, which explained how the expression templates works, you would see where it calls catch to string in there to do that. If it doesn't understand a custom type, then you may see this in your output. So it's worth seeing how we get around that. So by default, if your type supports the insertion operator overload for a string, it will just work. Catch will find that and use it. If it doesn't, you can write an overload for catch to string in the catch namespace, which just takes your type and returns a standard string. And then it should work. There are some cases where that's not quite enough, usually involving specializations.
In your
test, you can write it in your test code. If you've got an OStream operator overload already in your production code, it will pick that up, or you can write it just for tests. So some rare cases, usually involving partial specialization, you may have to drop to this StringMaker template class. It's a bit more complex, but works the same sort of way. You've got to convert static method there, takes your type, returns a standard string. For all the primitive types, and even standard library types like standard vector, standard map, even standard tuple, there's already overloads with catch to string in catch. You don't have to worry about those. So mostly it just works, but it's worth keeping that in mind. And then just to address a couple of the elephants in the room, the most common questions I get when I've given this talk before. Firstly, what about threading? Catch doesn't have any awareness of threads at the moment. The main problem is that it's targeted at C++03 compilers and has no external dependencies. It's the way I want to keep it. So it's quite hard to put a portable threading support in there. The plan is to conditionally include support for C++11 compilers using the C++11 threading primitives. That's just not been done yet. But that is coming. And the other elephant is, what about mocks? So catch doesn't have any built-in support for mocks, mostly because I tend not to be a mockist. If you know what mock objects are, you know what a mockist is. It's a different approach to testing. But a lot of people find them valuable. I get this asked this a lot. There's a couple of mocking frameworks that do work quite well with catch that I'm aware of. One of them is HippoMox. There'll be a link to both of these at the end. I think you have to do a little bit of integration code to get that to work. And the other one, a fairly new framework called Tromplay. And the author of that was already aware of catch when he wrote it, so he made sure it worked well with it. Again, there is a little bit of integration code, but he includes that on his GitHub page. Again, there's a link to that at the end. Other mocking frameworks may or may not work. I don't know about those. Sorry, again?
The cache doesn't work with C++11
coding currently. So it works with C++11 and C++14. And there's a number of things in there already conditionally that I've had to do to make it work. Say, for example, with a null pointer. It has to understand that as a particular type. And there's certain things like the deprecation of auto pointer. So I've had to use unique pointer and some things like that I've already had to do just to make it work. But in terms of actually using C++11 features, relying on them,
There's nothing in there currently that relies on C++ 11. But I think that's worth changing for threading support, because that's quite a big thing. Now, if you're using it for pure unit tests, that shouldn't matter, because you shouldn't be doing threading in a unit test. But I've deliberately tried not to call catch a unit test framework, because you can use it for non-unit tests, particularly integration tests, where you do want to work in a multi-threaded environment. What I currently do when I'm in my day job where I use catch is I have to sort of store up all of my failures, maybe in a TLS structure, and then once I've joined my threads, and then I assert on it in catch. It's a bit of a kludge, but it does work. So I would like to get full support into catch. And if I've got time, just to run through a couple of the other things that are hopefully coming in catch. Generators, it's quite a big area. It's been on my queue for a few years now, but basically we'll give you a way of doing property-based testing, of testing large ranges of values at once. Matches is another area, quite a big part that I want to try and keep sort of off to the side, more modular thing. But matches are basically a way of composing assertions, writing custom assertions for particular needs and composing them together. So you can have, you know, the knot of an assertion, you can group them together with ands and ors. So it's quite a powerful technique. Needs some support in catch, and there's a prototypical version already in there. And finally, possibility of changing the name. A recurring complaint over the years has been that catch is not a very searchable name in the context of particularly C++. Search Stack Overflow for catch, you'll see what I mean. So I've been ignoring this for a few years, but I've finally thought maybe it's a real problem. Be looking at the possibility of a new name. My current favorite proposal is Catfish. So it keeps a similar sort of backronym in there, but let me know what you think about that afterwards. So I think we can finish there. Top link is just redirects to the GitHub page for catch. It's my blog, levelofindirection.com. You can also get there from extralevelofindirection.com. It just redirects.
I often talk about catch there and other things. And those two mocking frameworks that I mentioned just a little while ago.
So sorry about all the demo issues, but we mostly got there in the end. But thanks for coming.